Good day, everyone. We welcome everybody to the third session of Mandate 2020. We are happy to be here. God has been dealing with us first session and second session. We want to welcome our viewers from all the corner of the globe. And today we want to examine an important topic in leadership, and that is the leader and his health. And we all know that when it comes to the health of a leader, the health of a leader has actually become the lead, the limitation to a lot of leaders that we have around here. And that is why today we want to look at the leader and his health. And we are lucky to have here with us Dr. Victor Makojola, who is actually the consultant psychiatrist and the deputy CMAC, University College Hospital, Ibadan. You're welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
And I know you are ready. I know you are ready for what God is about to do in his life, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Brother Bolaji. It's a pleasure to be here and to be able to be part of this year's mandate, and also to be able to share a few things about the leader and his health. The health of the leader is extremely important in every aspect of life, particularly in ministry, in the household of God. Because people take a cue from how their leaders deal with their health situation, and they follow along the same path. So the leader himself needs to demonstrate the best possible judgment with regards to his health, so that membership can also follow suit. But to start, we'll need to look at what is health. Health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being. Now, I've mentioned physical, mental, and social well-being. These three aspects of health are interconnected. When one aspect suffers, most times the other aspects also have to adjust. Either they begin to suffer as well, or you may need to do some adjustment in the other aspects. Let's take, for instance, something that is quite common, that is quite recent and still ongoing, COVID-19, is a physical illness. If any individual contracts the virus, you become, if you are unlucky, you become physically ill. Of course, majority of the people who contract the virus, we have no symptoms at all, and they will just continue life as usual. But for those who become physically ill, this physical illness, once it's diagnosed, you've gone through tests, and they tell you are positive, you develop some mental response to this. Some degree of anxiety will come in. You may actually feel depressed. You may think actually that you are going to die, even despite all assurances that is not a death sentence. So you can see how physical health has begun to affect the mental health. And of course, social well-being of that individual may also become affected. When he has actually overcome the virus and decides to go back home, you might find the people at home running away from him, thinking that he might still infect them, despite the evidence saying he's no longer infective. So in this way, he may become an outcast, which is part of social well-being, not having the adequate social well-being. This, in turn, begins to affect his mental health again. So we can see that these three aspects are really interconnected. But we're looking at having people, leaders, who are healthy in all three aspects. And with that background of what health is, then we can look at who or what is a leader, or what is leadership about. Leadership entails a process of getting people, influencing others to achieve a common goal. So there must be a common goal that everybody subscribes to, and then there must be this individual that rallies around others, tapping into their different talents to achieve that common goal. So that is what makes one a leader, the one who is involved in getting this done. Now, if we say in different settings, who are the people we regard as leaders? One, the person who is going to be referred to as a leader, of course, must have a team. He must be a member of a team. You can't lead alone. You have to have people you are working with. In the church, that would be your team of leaders, the departmental heads, the congregation. So you must belong to a team to be a leader. You must also be gifted in motivating people to do what they will naturally be unable to do. Some may be afraid of speaking in public. You must be able to motivate them to cultivate the habit and the skills necessary to achieve all this. It must be someone that is able to appreciate others. If you are a leader, you don't think that you have it all and others have nothing. You must be able to appreciate the contributions of every member of your team. And also be able to take responsibility. When things don't go well with the output of the team, you must be able to take responsibility and say, yes, we have not done well, and I'm the leader of the team, so I'm the one to take the blame. Not shifting blame on members of your team. You must be one that people can trust. Every member of the team must be able to trust you, and then you are the type that will not run away when things are difficult. There are tough times facing every team. The leader must be the one that stands and help the team to face very difficult times. Why is the leader important? It's important because no team succeeds without a good leader. Also, when it comes to church, the vision of God, the things God wants to accomplish, is usually first imbibed by the leader, transmitted to the members of the group, and then you rally all the resources around to accomplish the goal that God has set for that group. So without the leader, really nothing can happen in the house of God, or without leaders, because as we will find out, almost all of us are leaders. Why, before I move on, now, I said all of us are leaders. That means it's not only the senior pastor or the DGO that is the leader in the church. So this message is not for pastors alone. So when I start giving some instructions, don't just start nudging people and say, hey, pastor, you know, by way. But all of us in the church, in fact, all men and women in the church are leaders. All adults in the church, at one level or the other, you are performing some leadership roles. We have departments, we have cell units, we have different groups, activity groups. All activity groups have leaders. So at one point or the other, in your service to God, you are a leader. So this message is for everybody, not just for those we have designated with titles. Why are leaders prone to ill health? Why does their health tend to suffer more frequently than others? One is because they carry a burden for the team. Everybody who has a problem in a team reflects it onto the leader or deflects it onto the leader. So if you are having an illness, the first thing most people to do is to call up their pastors. So your illness has become the pastor's illness. So he has to pray for you. And you know, you can't imagine the number of people that call such leaders on a daily basis with different kind of issues that they need to be resolved. Secondly, they take responsibility for actions and inadequacies of other people. Now, that means if somebody does something wrong in this church, everybody looks onto the senior pastor in the church for the inadequacy of a member of the church. That is the nature of leadership. If any member of your team misbehaves publicly or otherwise, everybody looks onto you, and then you have to, you know, sort of be the face of the inadequacy at that time and atone for it. Oftentimes also, leaders are extremely busy. Their schedule is so tight that they forget about their own health. They forget even to rest, about taking time off to rest. And when they've gone on like this for a while, the body, which is actually a machine, will begin to complain, and then their health will begin to suffer. Sometimes some leaders want to be seen as heroes, as super human beings. So even when they are having some ailment here and there, they will not complain until the illness has gone beyond the stage where a remedy can be proffered. Examples are abound, and there are good ones and there are bad ones. We had a leader during this crisis in the United Kingdom who became ill with COVID-19. But he was humble enough to come on here and say, oh, I've also caught the virus, and I'm going to follow the protocol that we have been advising everybody to follow. And he did exactly that. Stayed at home. While staying at home, the illness got worse. He had to be moved to the hospital. They also let the whole world know that their leader is going to a hospital. And then God was merciful. He survived. And when he was discharged, he told the whole world, I've gone through this. I've survived. That process alone would have given a lot of people hope in the country. Rather than to be seen as if the leader is weak for being sick, because we're all human beings and we can take ill at any time. Their leaders also have this additional stress of being afraid of failure. You get to be a leader because you've been excellent in several ways. And such people tend to have so much pressure to succeed in every other thing they do afterwards. But life, unfortunately, does not always follow that script. So occasionally, they may fail. And this fear of failure really drains the energy out of a lot of leaders, and also means that once they're so concerned about this, their health may also begin to suffer. Now, all these reasons why leaders are prone to illness, they all result in one single terminology that we use, or single term that we use. They all increase the stress level that the leader is exposed to. Because of all this concern about covering for my members, about, you know, taking care of them, fear of failure and all that, what it does is that it puts the leader persistently under stress. So their stress level becomes enormously high. And when that happens, there are certain things, or hormones we call them, that begins to get released in the body when our stress level goes up. These hormones have this effect of preparing the body to either fight or take a flight or run away. What do they do? One of them is adrenaline and the other is cortisol. They are there to protect the body. But because they are there to be used for a short period and then you escape from the danger and continue with your life, they become counterproductive when the stress is coming every day. So that means they are there permanently every day. And that is where the problem with stress is. When they're there permanently, they increase your blood pressure. The adrenaline specifically will increase your blood pressure. We increase your heart rate. We increase the tension in your muscles. We make you want to take action. Even when you need to relax, you can't relax. And the other hormone, cortisol, will begin to drive glucose into your bloodstream. These two things are very important because of some of the consequences of stress that I'm going to mention down the line, affecting most leaders. Now, when these hormones have come to play and they've done the activities I mentioned, then they begin to affect the body in several ways. In several ways, they begin to affect the body negatively, starting from the brain. The ability to concentrate begins to wane. The individual is not able to concentrate as he used to. They also get angry more easily than before. You can see that some leaders, people do a sign of the cross when they want to enter their office because they are irritable. So if you don't speak well quickly, they get angry and they shout at you. And it's not because they are bad as individuals, it's because they are under so much stress, and the stress is beginning to affect their brain, making them very angry and irritable. Their mood also becomes unstable. They may be getting anxious, unhappy most of the time. Stress goes beyond the brain. It affects also the heart. I mentioned the fact that the adrenaline could increase blood pressure. If that's maintained for a long time, it could become hypertension. The heart could also fail. You can have what we call heart failure. And then we can have heart attacks occurring in people under stress. Joints and muscles are not spared. You can see that when people are under stress, they complain a lot more of joint pains. Knee pains, elbow pains, and all the joints are all causing some pain and the other without any cogent medical reason for such pains. So that could also be a manifestation of stress on the body. There's a system in our body called the immune system. Yes. That is the system that helps to protect us against infections, against developing cancer. When a leader is under stress, this system gets suppressed. His activity becomes slowed down, so that the leader now is more prone to infections. He's more likely to come down with malaria, more likely to come down with bacterial infections, viral infections, and so on and the rest. And if they're in their middle ages, it also makes them now prone to cancers. Cancer cells are naturally in the body, but they will not develop because the immune system suppresses them. Now, when stress is too much, it suppresses the immune system, hence giving life to cancer cells. So that is why you begin to have all sorts of cancers coming up in such people. Skin also will suffer under stress. There will be hair loss. And even if hair is not dropping off the person's head, they may actually be getting gray earlier than usual. We all remembered when Barack Obama became president of the United States. He was all full of black hair. And within 1 year of stress, as the leader of the most powerful nation on earth, at that time at least, it became gray quickly. And this happens to people when they assume leadership of very key organizations. Gray hair begins to come. Baldness may also begin to set in faster than is expected. The other parts of the body also feel this impact, even the reproductive system. Interest in previous activities the individual is interested in may begin to wane. And men in particular may begin to experience what we call erectile dysfunction. They will not be able to perform as they used to anymore when stress is too much. So we can see that the effect of stress is all over the body. It's all over the body. And it's so huge and such that anyone who is a leader needs to be aware of all this and begin to preempt the occurrence of all these things that I have mentioned. How do you know that there's something wrong with your body as a leader? What are those indicators? What are those things you check that will keep you on your toes and begin to say, oh, I think I need to consult further about my health? The first thing is your sleep. When your sleep pattern begins to change such that you are not able to sleep as soundly as you used to, you are going 2-3 days without sleep. That could be an indication of something going wrong with your body. Now, this could be from a mental problem, it could be from a physical problem. Virtually all physical ill health we manifest with some disruption of sleep pattern. So when sleep is getting disrupted, you need to begin to check for what is the cause. The sleep problem is not the problem. It's an indication of the fact that there is a problem, and that is why you are not being able to sleep very well. Of course, there are several other parameters now that we can check that will let us know whether we're in a good space or we need to do something. One of them is our blood pressure. We need to be checking these on a fairly regular basis. And before, to check your blood pressure, you may need to visit a doctor or a nurse to help you check your blood pressure. But technology has gone to the point that you can check your blood pressure at home by yourself. And now we advocate that anyone above 40 should have these digital blood pressure monitors at home, so that at least on a monthly basis, you can have an idea of what your blood pressure is like. It's not very nice to ask a leader that, oh, so what's your blood, when last did you check your blood pressure? And they say, last year, when they were having outreach. No, that's not good enough for a church leader. You shouldn't wait for outreach to check your blood pressure. You should have a blood pressure monitor at home to check your blood pressure on a fairly regular basis and be sure you are within the normal range. Luckily, I might still talk about the normal range, but even if I don't, most of these gadgets are prepared such a way that if your range is abnormal, it will alert you. It will bring out red warning sign that there's something wrong with this. So even if you don't know the right digits, the warning sign will alert you to go to the hospital. So you may also need to check your blood sugar level. That may help to indicate whether you are going towards being diabetic or not, and may indicate several other problems in the body. The other digit that is important to you and your health is your weight. You need to check your weight on a fairly regular basis. The weight alone may not mean much. I may weigh twice your weight and still be healthy if my height is much more than yours. And then your weight might be two-thirds of mine and you are unhealthy because compared to your height, it is beyond what it is expected for your size. We call that the body mass, basal metabolic index, body mass index, BMI. You need to check your BMI, the body mass index, to know whether you are within the normal range. Usually the normal range is between 25 to 30. And if you are outside that range, then you may need to do something about your weight. Why? Because there's nothing you can do about your height. Your height is by the time you are an adult, is practically static. But your weight, you can work on that. Your full blood count can be checked. How your heart works can also be checked out. Some of these tests were previously things that require some special process to get to do. But with advancement of technology, most laboratories can get this test done for us. For men in particular, you may also need to check your prostate. For anyone above 40, at least maybe once in a year, there is a substance we look for in the blood called the prostate-specific antigen that can let you know if there is a risk, if your risk of developing prostate cancer is increasing or has increased. And that might be the pointer for you to go and see your doctors so that they can do something before it gets out of what can be controlled. So it is advisable for all men above 40 to at least once in a year check their prostate-specific antigen through a blood test. Of course, there are some other things we call cancer screens. All those as well could be done. If you see your doctor on your annual medicals, they can write all that for you to have a look at. So we've talked about health, we've talked about leadership, and we've talked about why leaders are prone to ill health. We've talked also about the pathway to the leaders developing ill health, which is through stress, and what stress can cause in the body, different things that stress can cause in the body. I think at this point, I might want to pause a little for Rabology to make some announcements before we go to some major illnesses resulting from these stressful conditions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Victor Makonjola. It has really been explosive and also enlightening. I want to admonish our audience that are actually watching us on Facebook and YouTube via Zoom. You can please send your comments on, send your questions via the comment section, because we will be asking our doctor, and your question is actually also going to be answered. So please just keep on sending those questions. The question will be collated, and I, in few minutes, will be reading out your question, and our doctor will be reacting to your question. Thank you very much. Doctor, please, you can continue.
Thank you very much, Brother Bolaji. I would like to expand a bit on two conditions that leaders are prone to. And it's because these two conditions, when they occur alone or they occur together, they are most likely to result in very terrible consequences. Often death, but even before death, the suffering could be enormous from these two conditions. These conditions are high blood pressure and diabetes. High blood pressure occurs when an individual's blood pressure becomes persistently elevated above the normal level. Normal blood pressure, we say, is 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury. 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury. When the blood pressure becomes elevated above this, significantly elevated above 140-90, and it persists for a long time, there's so many damages to the other organs of the body, such that ultimately the individual will die from what we describe as chronic medical conditions. And it's better not experienced to go through the consequences of hypertension and or diabetes. So we advise that people check their blood pressures at least on a monthly basis when you're above 40 years. Interestingly, most leaders in the church are usually above 40 years because it takes time in training for you to get to position of leadership. So we are advising everyone to check their blood pressure on a regular basis and take action once you see it going outside the normal range. At some point, we've had outreaches before, and routine outreaches, and you stumble on somebody having blood pressure of 200 over 140, 200 over 130, that is an emergency. That individual shouldn't be walking around smiling, because death could occur from stroke and from some other medical incidences at any point in time. And we don't want that to happen to our leaders. A lot has been invested in them. God has deposited so much in them, and you don't want them to just have a sudden death. And that is why we need to check blood pressure regularly. And once you discover that you are out of the normal range, you need to consult a doctor as soon as possible. Does it show any sign at all in those who are having high blood pressure? Most times, there are no signs. And that is why it is described as a silent killer. It kills the individual silently. You think you are fine, there's nothing wrong, you're walking around, and then suddenly a stroke happens, resulting in paralysis of maybe one part of the body or half of the body, which oftentimes can result in sudden death. You're fine 1 minute, and then there's what we call heart attack. Some of the vessels of the heart seem to collapse. They are not released. They are not allowing blood to flow through into the muscles of the heart, and then the individual can also die from that. So most times, it really does not give any sign, which is why you have to go and check your blood pressure. Now, when it gives signs, you can have things like headache as a sign of hypertension. Shortness of breath could occur. Nosebleeds. If you have unexplained nosebleed, your nose is bleeding for no reason. You have not had the punch to the nose, and then you need to please check your blood pressure. Dizziness could occur. Chest pain, visual changes. Sometimes some individuals might just notice blood in their urine. And that may be the pointer to high blood pressure in such people. And the consequences, if you don't do something, I mentioned a stroke will occur, heart failure will occur, your vision can become impaired on a permanent basis. Kidney diseases are also a major consequence of hypertension. And when kidneys are damaged, the end of life is near, except you are able to replace at least one of those kidneys. That is what we call renal transplantation. You need to bring in another kidney. Now, who is going to donate the kidney for you is another question. So even when you have people who are willing, their kidney may not be compatible with your own blood antigens, we call them. So in that way, it will reject, your body might reject that foreign kidney. So it takes a long time to even find someone that is compatible, even when people are willing because they love you enough and they want to donate. So you really don't want to get to this point. You really want to do something early about blood pressure. And the second item is the second condition that leaders are prone to is diabetes. And this is when you have the level of sugar in the blood being higher than normal. When the level of sugar in the blood is higher than normal. Sugar is expected to be in the blood for us to be alive. If it's too low, we have problems. We won't be able to follow discussions. We might even faint and collapse. We need some sugar in our blood, but when it gets above a certain level, then it becomes a problem. In diabetes, that is what happens. The body is not managing the sugar level very well for some reasons, so many reasons, and then you have this elevated level. How would you know that you are likely to, that you are diabetic and that there's diabetes going on? One, your hunger level might increase. You might begin to eat more than usual. Also, you get thirstier than usual because the blood in the sugar is drawing water away from the rest of your, the sugar in your blood, rather, is drawing water away from the rest of your body. So you feel thirsty. You feel like you need water most of the time. Of course, weight loss is also could be an indication of diabetes as well. Frequent urination. You find some people urinating 10 to 15 times within 1 to 2 hours. This may be an indication that there is diabetes. They get easily fatigued. They get tired easily. When they have small injury, it takes long for it to heal. Sometimes it does not even heal at all because the sugar is preventing the healing of the injury. It's allowing organisms to grow easily to prevent healing of the injury. So those are some of the symptoms you might find in someone who is diabetic. So if you have anyone who has any of these, they may need to visit a doctor urgently. Also, I mentioned earlier, technological advancement. You do also need to go to the hospital sometimes to be able to know your sugar level. There are gadgets, we call them glucometers, that can be used at home to check your sugar level and to know whether it's increasing or is within normal range. So how does the leader manage stress so that it does not develop all these consequences? Because if you manage it well and your genetic makeup is such a good one, you may actually live to 70, 80 without any of these consequences I've mentioned. That would be rare. Most of us are programmed to develop it in middle ages. That is the nature of chronic medical conditions. From around 40 and above, majority of the population are going to develop one or the other of these chronic medical conditions. The important thing is to detect it early so that it doesn't cause all the damages that may cause down the line. So how do you deal with stress as a leader? One, you need to get regular physical activity. We can remember the advice of Paul to Timothy, talking about physical activity profiting a little. It's a sound advice. It means even as far back as that time, the benefit of exercise has been identified. That yes, doing physical activities profits the body. Even though he was advising him to do more of spiritual activities, but he recognized the importance of physical activities. This was a time that people walk to their farms, walk to their works, they are engaged in manual labor, which is already physical activity. But they were still being advised again to exercise on top of that. How much more now that we drive to work? Some of us cannot even walk to the bus stop. We take a bike from the door of our house to where we're going to work. We get to work, we sit for the next 8 hours just on a desk, sedentary lifestyle. All these things are increasing stress and causing premature death amongst leaders. So regular physical activity is encouraged, exercise in particular. And in exercise, there must be sweat. You cannot say you have had an exercise if you have not sweated. So you must, we say about 30 to 45 minutes on alternate days, or at least 2 to 3 times in a week, will be adequate exercise. We need also to make it a conscious effort to relax. Have as part of your schedule a period that you have not fixed any other activity other than relaxation. During this period, you can engage in activities that help you to relax. Okay? So there must be designated rest time for you. Apart from sleep, there must be a period that you relax. You can watch movies, do whatever during that period. Then it's also good to have a good sense of humor. That also helps to release stress. It's not surprising that some of the people making more money in entertainment industries now are the comedians, because people have found the benefit of going to pay sometimes 10,000 naira, 20,000 naira just for somebody to make you laugh. Because the moment you are done with that period of laughter, all the distress in your body seems to go down. Of course, if you get into your grind the next day, the stress will start to build up. So the more we laugh, the more we enjoy humor, the less stressful we are. Spending time with the family is also extremely important. It also helps to reduce stress. Having enjoyable hobbies, swimming, reading, all these also can be quite helpful. There are some things people engage in now that they think it's relaxing, but they are actually very taxing to the brain. Things like playing video games. Or you may say, oh, if I want to relax, I play video. Video game is not relaxing. Because you want to win. Because you want to win, your adrenaline is up and you are actually actively competing. So that really would not cause any relaxation. So it's not advisable as a form of relaxation to do this. You're also not advised to use things like coffee, like alcohol, as a means of relaxation, or any illegal drug for that matter. So we can see that if we adopt all these stress busters, so to say, things that can reduce our stress level, the tendency to develop those consequences of stress will be minimal, hypertension and diabetes. And if we imbibe the knowledge we have been passing out about what to do about your health, even if you develop any one of these conditions, you will pick it up at the earliest possible stage. When this is done, the doctor may not even need to give you a medication to resolve the issue. He may simply advise you on your lifestyle. He might say, oh, your weight is higher than what it should be. Start dieting, exercise more, and hypertension may disappear. if you catch it at the early stage. You may say, okay, you're going to combine these lifestyle changes with these one or two medications, and all the problem is resolved. So there's also the importance of identifying early, identifying these conditions early. And if we do, usually the story will be a good one at the end of the day. So I advise our leaders, especially to prioritize their health. No one can look after them better than themselves. So they need to prioritize their health. If they know they can be very, forget about taking care of themselves, they can actually designate someone in their team. You be asking me about my blood pressure every Monday, so that if I've forgotten, the person can say, oh, Pastor, you've not checked your blood pressure this week. Then the person goes quickly to check the blood pressure. So you can have helpers, people you designate. Leaders need to be accountable, and part of their accountability is their health. So if you are ill as a leader, you also need to inform those who are close to you so they can help you on the path of getting back to good health. Using medications, having to take prescriptions is nothing bad at all, and is not against the precepts of the religion, of Christianity as a whole. I'll go back to Timothy. Paul also advised him at some point, 1 Timothy 5:23, no longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities. Apparently, Timothy is somebody that was sickly, had frequent illnesses. What Paul was doing was prescribing medications from his own experience. He was not a doctor, he was a lawyer, but he was a knowledgeable person. So from his experience in life and from what was the custom at the time, they know if you have a stomach problem, this is the prescription for it. So try and use it. Even though a lot of people try to use this to justify alcohol use, the wine here is a medication. And the same way we have alcohol in most of the medications we use now, the prescription here is a medication for Timothy to get well. Despite the fact that Paul knew he could lay hands on him and cast away everything, but yet he's telling him exactly what to do. So I advise our leaders not to shun medical advice, to approach doctors and get treated if they have any ailment on time. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. Wonderful. I know a lot of our viewers are actually giving you a round of applause. It's so beautiful, wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Lord.
Thank you very much. I have actually questions with me online because we're connected.
Okay.
So I want to say this before I actually read the question. I read something on God's general, a renowned man of God said, God gave me a horse, but I ran my horse down.
Mm-hmm.
So he died at the age of 39. Mm. Powerful man, but he did not take care of his health. I think the word goes to everybody. We are all leaders. Mm. We are all leaders that we should take care of our health. Thank you very much, sir, once again, Dr. Victor Majoku. Makojola. I want to pick the first question, which is actually also pertinent, from YouTube.
Okay.
He said, sir, please, how do we manage pot belly? I'm interested in the question, sir. I'm interested in
Very
the question.
Good question.
He said, how do we manage pot belly? And are there attendant health issues surrounding having a pot belly?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. I can see that you've been trying to suck in your tummy since we started. You've succeeded a bit. Yes, we call it abdominal fat. And it's extremely important because it helps to predict most people who would develop these two conditions I've talked about. The bigger your belly, the bigger the abdominal guts, the more likely you are going to develop hypertension, the more likely you are going to develop diabetes.
Wow.
And some other things we call metabolic syndrome. They're in the same sort of family. So it's extremely important that one works on eliminating abdominal fats as possible. That extra, it used to be a sign of good living. It's a sign of going to die quickly now. So from what we know, it's no longer, it's not fashionable. Not just for your dressing, but for your health. So it's good that the individual has this, and it's something that has to be. And there are many ways to deal with this, but the surest ways are diet and exercise to be able to sustain these, not to come back quickly. People do surgery these days, but of course, if your lifestyle does not change, the fat will reaccumulate back into the tummy. You've heard about tummy talk. People go remove the fat around the tummy. It improves your health temporarily, but because you've not changed your lifestyle, it will reaccumulate. So it's good for people to change lifestyle. Lifestyle can reduce the fat around the tummy through exercise and dieting.
Thank you very much. So pot belly is no longer a sign of good living. It's a sign of someone is about to leave the earth. The second question is from Zoom. It's also a question I'm also interested in.
Okay.
How do one know when it is addiction to drinking Coke? Can drinking Coke be an addiction? And when do we truly need sugar in our body?
Okay. We need sugar almost every time in our body. There must be a minimum level of about 60 to 100 milligrams of sugar in your body, in your bloodstream, at every point in time, to keep you, you know, awake, alert, and useful. But when it begins to go higher than this, going to about 200 milligrams of 200 milligrams per DL. Then you begin to have issues of diabetes, pre-diabetes coming up. Sugar in Coke and the addiction possible with Coke, it's a fact, not a myth. One, because you can have addiction to sugar itself. Two, Coke also contains caffeine. That is what we have in coffee. And you know, for those who are coffee lovers, it's an addiction. You get used to it, and when you don't have it, you have what we call withdrawal symptoms. You are not happy. You are hungry. You are irritable. You are eating out at everybody until you take coffee again, then you become normal. So there could be addiction to Coke, as the person described it, because Coke contains sugar in very large quantity, coffee in smaller amount. And the more you take sugar, the more likely you develop an addiction to sugar as well.
Thank you very much. I have quite some questions.
Okay.
I'll go to the next question. It's from Facebook.
Okay, sir.
He said, what are the causes of persistent eye problem like itching?
Persistent eye problem like itching?
Itching.
It depends on the age of the individual. For younger people, eye problem, especially itching or discoloration, is common. There's something we call vernal conjunctivitis, just like an irritation of the white of the eye, the conjunctiva. So if this is irritated, then itchiness will happen. It's not, but it's something. It's not like a vision-threatening matter, but it's something you need to see a doctor for, and they can prescribe, we call them anti-allergies, that will reduce the itchiness of the eye or the tearfulness of the eye. So it's not a major problem if what you have is your eye is itching. Just see an ophthalmologist, I'm sure that will be resolved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a feeling that this question is somehow answered, but I'll still ask.
Okay.
Because there's an increase in leaders slumming these days. Is there any more thing the church can do to help the leaders' health? Because this program
is about that. I think it's a good question, because we've had instances, even sometimes people slump in church during service and then they have to be rushed. And before you get to the hospital, sometimes death may have occurred. That is why this sort of enlightenment should be coming more often from the church. As we have organized now, we will expect several other organizations to begin to enlighten church leaders, church members, you know, develop an advocacy around preserving the health of our leaders. I'm sure if the message is coming often enough, most leaders will begin to imbibe this. And even those who are yet to be leaders will imbibe it, so that when they are leaders, they are already practicing, you know, good health measures. We may also make it a policy, this will be an advice to the leadership, to make it a policy that you must do your annual checkup before you can start earning your salary in the new financial year of the church. So if the financial year of the church starts in January, you will not get your January salary as a church leader, a pastor that is paid by the church, except you come with your medical report that everything is, not necessarily everything should be fine. It may not be fine, but you must go and get the report. So if we make this a rule, you'll find that more people are going to go for checkups. If people find it difficult to go for checkups, so they need some compulsion at times. And I think pay is a major compulsion for people to heart. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have two more questions to go. Okay. We just have to hit it fast because of our time.
All right.
The fourth question, chocolate, plantain, banana, purple, mango, and so on. Is it good for the body? Probably this is the personal interest of the reader, because the chocolate with fruits.
Chocolate and fruit.
And fruit. Sir, what is your advice on this? When can the intake of this be too much? And let me direct the question this way. Is it possible to also take too much of fruit? Can the intake of fruit also be too much?
Excessive. Everything is in moderation. Everything is good if taken in moderation, including chocolate. Chocolate has a lot of sugar, a lot of and some other chemicals that actually improves one's mood. We call them amphetamines. So in moderation, there's no harm in taking chocolate. But it becomes a regular habit, then you may have the usual of addiction to sugar as well coming from that. Fruits are prescribed for liberal use. You can use it a lot, but anything in excess is going to cause problem down the line. It may not cause major health problem, but you will have digestive issues. You may not be able to hold down anything when you take too much of fruits as well. So everything needs to be taken in moderation. But we encourage eating of fruits as much as is in moderation, not too much.
Thank you very much, sir. Then the last but not the least, this question is quite tricky, but then I expected this question in this kind of situation surrounding the world. What is the effect of stress in coronavirus infection?
That's a very good question. Like I mentioned, we are all prone, everybody. We are likely to catch the virus if we come in contact with it. Now, what will determine those who will develop the disease and those who will just clear the virus, they will contract it, clear it without even knowing, is how strong our immune system is. And our immune system, the strength of it depends on how much stress we are experiencing. So that is why I said if the stress is too much, it suppresses your immune system and then it makes it more likely that you are going to contract coronavirus. So if in this room there are seven of us and somebody, one of us has the, or somebody comes in with the virus, let's say the virus is in the air, all seven of us may not develop the virus, may not develop COVID-19. The reason being that some of us might have more robust immune system compared to the others. Some of us might have lower stress level. Hence, our immune system is good. So in that room, we may not have more than two or three of us contracting the virus because they are less stressed. Those who are more stressed are more likely to have low immune system and then end up developing the disease. So that is how stress and coronavirus are. And the other thing that affects stress is fear. If you are too afraid of coronavirus, your stress, your immune system will go down, and you are more likely to contract it as fourth contact. While someone who is not afraid of it has a normal immune system and may be able to resist the infection.
Thank you very much, sir. I have two questions run down because of my time. I'm going to read those two questions. You answer them, sir, in just like a minute.
Okay.
What is the cause of continuous belching, especially at night? And the second one is, how can one manage sleeplessness? So can we just have those questions in 1 minute, sir?
Belching, you may have to visit a doctor to probe into several things that could cause repeated belching at night. Managing sleeplessness, like I mentioned, sleeplessness could be a pointer to another illness. So you may still need to see a doctor to probe into why are you suddenly becoming sleepless, and then identify the condition and treat it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, sir. It has been wonderful having Dr. Victor Makojola. We really appreciate you, sir. God bless you, sir.
Thank you.
And to our audience viewers, please, we celebrate your time with us.